Americans love using their credit cards, the most secure and hassle-free way to pay. But D.C. politicians want to change that with the Durbin-Marshall Credit Card Bill. This bill lets corporate megastores pick how your credit card is processed, allowing them to use untested payment networks that jeopardize your data security and rewards. Corporate megastores will make more money, and you pay the price. Tell Congress to guard your card, because Americans lose when politicians choose. Learn more at guardyourcard.com.
Welcome to the Spiritual Awakening with Shaz podcast, where we unlock the power within and navigate the journey of your self-discovery together. I'm Shaz Sini, your spiritual mentor and life coach, here to help you tap into your inner guidance system and manifest your best life. Whether you're just beginning your spiritual journey or looking to deepen your practice, this podcast offers insights, techniques, and inspiration to elevate your consciousness and transform your reality. Get ready to shine your light and embrace your true potential. Remember, the answers are inside you. Let me be your guide on earth. Welcome back to the Spiritual Awakening podcast with Shaz. I'm your host, Shaz Sini, and today I have the beautiful Sami Abano with us today. She's known as the happiness expert. She is an author, speaker, podcaster, and a coach for coaches and healers. Sami is most known for her book, Make Change Fun and Easy, and her podcast of the same name. With the help of her signature Follow Your Heart process, a unique combination of positive psychology and the spiritual wisdom of our most effective change makers, Sami helps you overcome limiting beliefs, your chains of fear, to develop a positive mindset and to create impact and income you desire with fun and ease. Sami is also a certified Reiki healer and crisis counselor working to promote mental health and awareness. She models her heart-centered leadership and business that's both socially responsible and environmentally friendly. Welcome, Sami. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Jazz. So happy to be with you.
I was so privileged to be on your podcast when we met last year, and I value that experience so much. And I was very excited to talk to you about coming on my podcast too, because I believe what we talked about on your podcast was totally different. And I'd love to hear your story about your spiritual awakening. So just to give the listeners some insights, besides that introduction that I've just given, just tell us a bit about you and your business.
Sure. So, you know, I'm a happiness expert. And so really the core of what I do is about helping people take control of their happiness, of their mental, emotional well-being. So you can feel in control of your happiness. That was a big problem that I suffered with in my life. And when I went through that journey of growth and learning and healing and learned things that really helped me out, I was like, I gotta share this with other people. And so, you know, that's what I'm about now.
I love that. When you talk about that, it really gives me tingles, because it's part of exactly who I am, of sharing what I've been through with others. And I love meeting like-minded people. So just, when did you realize that you were on a spiritual pathway?
You know, like for me, I don't really, I've never really thought of it as, oh, I'm embarking on a spiritual pathway. For me, it was, and in some ways, even now, it's always been a quest for inner peace, a quest for happiness, a quest for healing. And really, you know, as I mentioned, I have experienced a lot of suffering in my life as a survivor of child sexual abuse. So from a young age, you know, I was very traumatized. And I say the good thing that came out of that is that really motivated me to do everything I could to figure out how I could, first of all, help myself. Actually, for so many years, that's all I cared about, because part of the big challenge that I was facing is that I was too scared and so forth to ask for help. I didn't think I could ask for help. I didn't think I could ever even speak about the fact that I'd survived sexual abuse. And so I was like, I have to figure this out on my own if I'm going to survive at all because, it's just, you just can't live with that kind of suffering in your life forever. And so, it's for me, the path of spirituality has been the path or the quest for inner peace and happiness.
I love that. And as a fellow survivor of traumatized childhood and sexual abuse, I understand how hard it is to fight and find what you need in order to get over that, because that's what started my healing journey of trying to come to terms with who I was because of that event, and the discovery through spiritual healing and Reiki and energy healing and the journey of the soul. It helped immensely. And I love that about you too. So as part of your awakening, was there a catalyst event? What was the big shift for you to really look down the healing pathway?
You know, I think my first conscious memory of that is when I finished reading a couple of books. Actually, they were autobiographies. One of them was the autobiography of Anne Frank, who, was, her family was, subjected to the Holocaust during World War II, and Annie didn't actually survive, but her diary did. And the second was autobiography of Johnny. That's the name of the book. I actually don't even remember her full name. I just remember it's the autobiography of Johnny. And Johnny was a teenager who had a horseback riding accident, and she got paralyzed from the neck down. And so in that context, she suffered a horrendous trauma. Now, both of these girls experienced trauma, very different from my trauma, but I really connected to their stories in various ways. And one of those threads was actually that, Johnny talked about her Christian faith and how ultimately that helped her to find some sense of peace and grounding in her life. And in Annie Frank's diary, she explores some of her Jewish faith and beliefs that give her comfort. And I was like, hey, what about me? I'm supposed to be Muslim. What does my faith teach me about being at peace? Because, and how come I'm not peaceful already? Because I grew up in a religious practicing Muslim family, and the very word Islam means peace. And yet I was like, how come I'm a Muslim without peace? This doesn't make any sense. And so that really got me to be like, no, I need to look into what Islam really teaches me and what I may be doing wrong because of which I'm not experiencing the peace Islam promises. And so I got for myself for the very first time in my life a copy of the translation of the Quran. I had learned how to read the Quran in Arabic, like as a ritual practice, but I didn't understand what I was reading. So this was my first attempt when I got an English translation. I was like, I'm going to read and understand and learn for myself. So that was really the starting point.
I love that, because a lot of people, as they do awaken through the spiritual process and look at more than their religious, parameters. I love that you wanted to expand and truly get the understanding of it. I didn't overly grow up religious. I did finally do my Catholic processes. Like, I did my Holy Communion, my reconciliation, and everything when I was 25 in order to be aligned with my niece and nephew, who I was asked to be their godmother. And for me, that authenticity, I can't promise to be something to someone without knowing about it. It made me explore it in that same way. So I really get that. And to understand it, not just read it, because there are so many people that claim they live by the Bible, but they read the scripture without true understanding of it. And they don't fully practice it. They just talk about it. And that's not who I like to be. And I love to see that you're very similar in that way. So thank you for that. So before you had that discovery, you mentioned that you grew up with Islam and as a really good Muslim. What are the core beliefs of that religious basis, and what were the fundamental values you had as a child?
Yeah, you know, one of the beautiful things about Islam is that it's not very complicated to get. I mean, of course, you know, there's simplicity, but there's depth and a lot of that we don't get initially necessarily. But, you know, certainly as a child, you know, the focus is on teaching you the basics, keeping it simple. And the very first principle or belief that makes you a Muslim is the belief that there's one God. There's no God but God. We say that's our testimony of faith is said in a interestingly negative way. There's no God but God. But really, think of that as there's just one God. There's this one creator, one sustainer, you know, that has created all of us, all of creation. And so that's the very first belief. And then, you know, it's like, okay, you have to be in a certain relationship with God. So, you know, you have to pray, you have to follow other guidance that God has given you in the Quran, which is our holy scripture, for how to live a good life. And when you begin to look at those guidances, the most important of those are, you know, engaging in charity. So, you know, you immediately get this lesson of, yeah, it's not just all about you. You can't just care about yourself. You have to care about your community. You have to care about other people. Then there's, you know, practices, ritual practice of fasting. But again, even though there is an individual aspect to the practice of fasting, there's also a built-in community aspect to how we fast in the Muslim community, because you pray together, you break fast together, you open fast together. I mean, yeah, you know, like
I get
throughout you're encouraged to interact with other Muslims who are also fasting and, you know, be in community with each other. And then, you know, so these are the three pillars or practices that are four pillars or practices that you do on an everyday basis. And then there's the fifth pillar that is known, and that's pilgrimage. But pilgrimage, interestingly, the physical pilgrimage that you would make is to Mecca, and that is only required for you if you're physically and financially able to do it. So not everyone has that experience of physical pilgrimage, but you know, you try to connect with the spiritual teaching or you know, the lesson behind it. And that also has a lot to do with recognizing the oneness of God, recognizing the oneness of all people and community, and, you know, really trying to you know, so the central value, everything just sort of comes back to this idea of all is one, God, because God is one, and we're all connected through God because He's our one creator and our one sustainer.
I love that. And in most religions across the world, there is still the unity of one, no matter what name we call God. And the different religions do name him differently, but the essence is the same. There is one creator, there is one being that created the entire universe, and it gave us life, and he made us in his image in order to live this beautiful life that we have. In the Catholic Church, they have the Holy Trinity, which is the Father, the Son, and the Holy Ghost, the different aspects of it. But in that, even in the oneness, I just see that as the two sides of the coin. The Holy Ghost aspect for me is the feminine energy, and the Son is the masculine energy. And God in itself, we call it Him for most part, but it's unilateral. It's not even a sexual thing. It's just the Creator. And that is both masculine and feminine, all in the one facility. So that's beautiful. How did you know that there was a shift happening within you to broaden your horizon into thinking about other structures of spirituality besides the faith that you were born into?
Yeah, it was just that, again, that quest for inner peace, right? And so the extent to which what I had learned was not sufficient to help me actually experience the inner peace that I so desperately needed, wanted, and desired, I was like, no, what else is there? And actually, like, for me, the core strategy, because this is just how I'd grown up, was ask God for help. And so actually one of my everyday, Muslims engage, if you're a practicing Muslim, you engage in ritual prayer. And the one thing that is absolutely required in every single ritual prayer that you perform is this prayer. It's like just seven verses. It's actually the first chapter of the Quran, and it's actually my favorite prayer, and it's a prayer for guidance. And in that, you literally say, God, please show me the straight path, show me the straight path. And that I started to, just recite that even when I was not doing the ritual prayers, like I would be reciting that a lot of my days, whenever I had any spare time, any that would be the dominant thought, because I was like in search for what could help me find that peace that I was looking for. And so I think when you have that strong intention for something, it's like you start to find those things coming to you, right? And so in terms of answers, and like for me, a lot of times for me it was like books that were my excellent friends, and that I oftentimes found the inspiration and the wisdom or the learning that I needed. But then also teachers started showing up in my life. And especially, I think for me, a lot changed in that context of finding actual real life teachers, not just books. When I came to America, I was almost 18 years old. And actually, so I started college here in America. And this was really where things opened up for me once I started college, because it was like a whole new world and a whole new, like, I had access to learning about things, subjects, etc., that I never had access to before, And so it's just, I really truly, now looking back, I can see that all the time, God was putting all these things in my way that were like showing me, helping me move forward, learn this, learn that, whatever it was that I needed, a little bit at a time,
I love that they do. They spoon feed us just little drips here, little drips there. It's not something that's, it would be very overwhelming if everything happened at once. It has to be in a way that is aligned and purposeful for our growth. And when we're ready for that expansion, because sometimes when you do it, you get so much information and it's like it stops traffic in the way that you perceive life beforehand. And it that's where the crisis of consciousness comes in for me and the essences of that dark night of the soul. So can you share a little bit about your experience with the dark night of the soul and that depth of despair?
Yeah. So, as I had mentioned, I survived child sexual abuse. I was like younger than 8 years old, when I survived that. But, in the, I would say for a good several years later, until I was about maybe 14 years or so, I was primarily in a denial and suppression mode. Because my little child self couldn't do anything better in terms of helping itself, and it was around when I was 14 years old that stuff started coming up, like memories and just emotions. And I had this like actually breakthrough moment also in that I found a magazine article that was talking about child sexual abuse. And actually, that was the very first time that I found language to describe what had happened to me. Because before that, I knew what I had experienced was something very terrible, something very wrong, and I was, not, I was never the same after that experience of child sexual abuse. But I didn't know what actually had happened to me. Like, I didn't know how to talk about it, how to really understand what was so wrong about it, and so on and so forth. So when I read that article, I was like, oh, I think this is what happened to me. I actually shifted into feeling very angry because that understanding of, someone did something really bad to me is like made me really angry. And so for me, that was, sort of like the next step in my healing journey in some ways. And the anger also motivated me to be like, this is not fair, this is not right, and I deserve to be happy. I deserve to, feel better. And so forth. And so, like, what can I do to help myself? Did I answer your question?
Yep, absolutely. And I get that feeling of it. I know exactly what you mean. I was 16 years old when I discovered what I'd been through was abuse. To me, it was normal everyday life. I didn't know it was wrong. I just happened to be watching TV and Oprah was telling the world of how she was abused. And my brain short-circuited and went, "What do you mean that's abuse? What do you mean that's not an expression of love or what's normal?" Like, inappropriate touching and having experiences that you don't know any better as a child. And it's very hard when you become an adult and you see things, hear things, and are told things that what you experience is totally out of the scale of what you consider normal. And that was a secret that I held for many, many years that I couldn't fully explore it with anybody. I held it inside. I still haven't openly told my family exactly what's gone on because I don't want to damage them and they don't need to live the horror that I already have. And it hasn't shaped me to be traumatized because I won't allow it to do that. It has shaped me to be strong. It shaped me to be resilient. It shaped me to find more resources within to climb that mountain. And I can appreciate the aspect of it to be get to where I am. I had so much work around forgiveness to do for it, for so many different players, and it's a long journey. I'm very blessed that the healing has taken place at a deep core level. I am very open about it now, able to talk about it, and there's no emotional attachment. I still feel the emotion. I still feel the essence of it. But the anger, the hurt, the pain, the trauma has gone.
I mean, sometimes, I surprise, I find myself surprised by reactions that I have at certain moments, like, because I mostly now when I'm similar to you, Shaz, where I can talk about it. I'm very peaceful and happy. But even so, there's, every so often something will happen, and then I'll be like, whoa, I didn't think that would trigger me so much. And, I think it was like 2, 3 years ago, I went for my very first, what's that called? Pap?
Absolutely.
Yeah, whatever that is, exam. And just being in that position, it took me like a good 2, 3 days to go back to normal, in terms of like my emotions and this and that. And I totally did not expect that.
At least, as not to downplay it in any way, shape, or form, but that happened in a doctor's surgery. I had flashbacks whilst having intimate relationships with a partner. And that was when I really had to go and get help because I ended up at the stage where I despise touch. And I'm a very tactile person. I love to hug people, and touch is very important to me. And I despised it. And that was in my 20s. I had to get deep help. I didn't know what to do. Unfortunately, I didn't get the deep help that I needed back then, but it wasn't until I was in my 30s and decided that I was worth fighting for. It was around 40 that I fully turned around and said, you know what? This isn't going to defeat me. I'm going to defeat it. And I finally put it to bed. I don't like that the trauma takes hold of us and it haunts us for so long. And that's why I got into the transformational coaching that I do and the healing journey for this. It doesn't have to take hold of all our life. We can come to peace with it and come to terms with what happened to allow that forgiveness of self to take place, because everyone thinks forgiveness is about giving the other person a free ride. It's not. It's about giving yourself peace. Those triggers, that attachment, those problems, they're all yours. The other person doesn't even know that they did it. They don't even know what they've contributed to 90% of the time. And they don't care. And we suffer
Yeah,
with it.
and sometimes to the ex like I had this experience. Well, part of the reason why also when I was around 14, I had that crisis of shifting away from, I could not sustain the denial and suppression anymore, is because I ended up living in the same house as a person who sexually abused me for 3 years. And so the constant every day being around that person, it was after I'd basically not had to deal with that for like so many years, it was very, very hard. And one thing about that made me so angry during those days especially was how he put on this act of what a wonderful person he is and how much he cares about me. Like, he had the audacity to act like he loved me and I was the crazy one for not wanting to let him touch me or acting out as I did, And I realized at some point that he enjoyed seeing me like for him it was like a game. The more disturbed and the more I acted out and then got blamed, and shamed and being like, Samia, why are you being bad? Behave yourself. The more he enjoyed himself. And at some point when it clicked in my mind that that was the case, something really shifted in me. And I was like, I'm not going to create any more drama. And I shut up. I stopped screaming and shouting. And I was like, I'm never going to talk to this man again. And I literally stopped talking to him. And all I would do is sit and stare at him anytime we were in the same room with all the hatred I could muster. And like, I can't tell you how many hours of my life I spend just thinking about all the most horrible ways I wished he would die and suffer. It was like not very healthy, but it was, how I was coping. So, but it changed him once I start that silent thingy. It like for a while it threw him off, but then he started to stay away from me. And it's just like I don't know how much he realized how much what he did hurt me, but to the extent but there was this aspect in his behavior that he was enjoying the some aspects of my suffering, of my acting out.
Yeah, that's. I never had it sort of like that. I did have interactions with the person after I found out, but they were very sporadic and limited. So it wasn't as traumatic as that. And I really feel for you because I know mine created so much problems. I ended up with CPTSD to the point that I had a hiccup spasm. I had a spasm in my body 24 hours a day, 10 months. I just wasn't capable of dealing with it. And that is when some of my greatest healing occurred after my nan died, because I got it not long after that when my mother said some things that set me off again. And I can understand the wanting to kill someone. Like, part of the reason why I don't talk to my own mother is I used to write stories of how I was going to kill her and dispose of the body. I tell people I'm this far from being a serial killer, and I'm not kidding. Because I thought about it and I obsessed about it until I had to burn those books and I had to get rid of that guilt, that shame, that blame, that essence, that demoralization, that worthlessness, the pity. The whole aspect of it was I just could no longer hold myself accountable as a victim. I wasn't a victim, I survived it. And that is why I choose now to thrive through it. And I help other people do that too. You're not what happened to you. You are the essence of who you are and how you got through what happened to you. And I truly believe in every aspect we gain something from it, even if that gain is as minute as we will never do that to another human being. I think that's the greatest goal ever because it is something that is systematic, and people that abuse and are abused become abusers, and that's a cycle that I definitely want to break.
Yeah.
So thank you for sharing all of that, and I really, my heart goes out to you, and I send you the most loving blessings for coping through that and coming out the other side, and then choosing to help other women come to terms with that. It's a very powerful person that can do that, and I admire anyone that does, and hence why there are movements around the world, like the Me Too movement, when celebrities stood up and talked about being sexually assaulted and battered as children and adults. And it is something that my heart prays constantly that we can eradicate that sort of thing. The one big trigger for me is the moment that I come into terms, because I do a lot of psychic readings and energy healing, is I still get very, very upset when I find current people going through that. And unfortunately, it exists on such a wide level. It's so disappointing to me, but I know that we are changing and there are more people understanding it's not right and therefore it's being put a stop to much faster and there's less denial. You never talked about it. Nobody discussed it. And even when you brought it up, people that should have listened to you and believed you are in this total essence of denial. This is not something a child would ever make up. They don't have the capacity to do so. The trauma they carry can be lifelong, and my goal is to not make it so.
Indeed.
So, after all that turned around and you got into looking at Reiki and energy healing, what changed within you? What else changed? How did you find peace in life?
It's just the change is that, I started feeling happy, I started feeling peaceful, right? And when that changes, everything changes. It's like, my relationships improved, my sense of life purpose and meaning shifted. Before I was like so contained within myself, like I turned inwards. I had such huge trust issues before. You know, I found it difficult to trust anyone. I found it difficult to trust even myself, for God's sake. So, you know, when you're living with that kind of fear, inability to trust, it just really constrains your life in all kinds of ways. And I mean, it's not like anyone else doing it to you. You're doing it to yourself, you know? And so the more you are able to, you know, the more you shift out of that fear-based thinking, the more you're able to learn to trust again, first of all yourself and then others. It just changes everything in your life, everything.
And that is one of the big lessons about anything that we've ever been to, just coming to that stage of acceptance. Can't change the past, but we can choose to better the future. And in it, I really am so determined to help people. Happiness is a choice for me. We can choose to wallow and relive and hold ourselves down and buried in victimhood, pain, suffering, and crap, or we can rise, elevate, and thrive. And in it, there's an old-fashioned saying, and I have a love-hate relationship with it, and it's what doesn't kill you makes you stronger. Trauma doesn't necessarily make you stronger. It causes massive problems, but at the same time, it does make you stronger. It makes you a better person. It's through overcoming that, accepting that it happened to you, but what happened to you doesn't have to define you. You now get to choose what you become because of that or despite it.
Yeah, you have to give like new meaning to what you have experienced, and a lot of the meaning that is healing and helpful is being able to focus on the lessons you're able to learn and how you're able to find good and create good out of whatever you have experienced. And I mean, there is, you know, now there is also, a more spiritual perspective that you can take to understand, like, why do we go through all this and how it connects to the purpose of our existence and so forth. But that perspective, I think, for me, certainly, I think now it's something I'm very much like grounding myself into more and more. But I think at the earlier stages of, like when I was a lot more traumatized and suffering, I don't know if that would have made as much sense to me, or if I would have been as much willing to accept that that was the case. And so at that point in time, though, this thinking about, okay, what good can I create out of this in terms of becoming stronger, becoming better, that was a good approach for me at, to move forward and to help me with that acceptance of things.
Yeah. And as you grow and evolve spiritually, and it's something that helped me finally let it go, the more you look at the bigger picture of things, I believe everything is cause and effect, right? The law of cause and effect. Your soul chooses to go through this. And trust me, I don't know why my soul chose to go through so much. I don't imagine that I would have volunteered for it. But I do believe it. I believe it at a core level. And I wanted to experience the feeling of that. And I wanted that feeling not to defeat me. And then I wanted to be able to find forgiveness, find acceptance, find love, find courage, find ability to grow through it, grow beyond it, and become something because of that, to become who I am by choice. And the greater spiritual understanding of that in the cause and effect factor was coming to terms with, I wanted to feel this side of it because at one stage I must have or will choose to feel the other side of it. And even though that horrifies me, it brings peace. Because we all have to feel the yin yang. Everything we want to understand as a soul, when we're back in source energy, we know everything. The knowledge is there. We are aware of everything. But our soul craves the feeling of it, the understanding, the experience. And you can't truly elevate and grow through so much ease. It just doesn't. And it disappoints me because I really look around and you look at all these people brought up with wonderful lives and great things, silver spoons in their mouth, have everything handed to them on a platter, and then they grow up and they create turmoil in order to grow. And I'm thankful that one of the choices that I didn't make was to go down the addiction route of drug or alcohol. Or a lot of sexual abuse survivors become sexual addicts and go down those avenues. And that is growth in the soul. And I don't judge anyone who's chosen those routes because it is coping mechanism and it is something that you do for the time being. But throughout it, you have to remember, no matter what, you survive because you're still here. And the fact you're still here means you defeated that already, so it doesn't need to have the hold or create the trauma that it is, because that's because you won't let it go. And the minute you let it go and you forgive all parties, and most of that forgiveness is for self, towards self, for choosing to go through it, that's where the peace, serenity, and enlightenment becomes one.
Yeah. You know, I do believe that each and every one of us, we do the very best we can with what we know and what we have.
Yeah.
And so, like, you know, me spending hours planning, or not, I didn't plan to actually do anything, but I imagined and wished for someone's horrible, suffering death. And, you know, that was the best I could do at that time. It really was. And so, but, and you know, similarly, like, I might not have chosen to do drugs or drugs, for example, but I think a lot of it had to do with the environment that I was in and the fact that, you know, I didn't really have those things readily available to me. And I also had this, like, personality where, you know, I just really just, I mean, I really, I don't, I mean, there, but there, like, there's other kinds of addictions, you know, that I developed, you know, like, for example, with eating unhealthy food, eating, you know, I think food-related addictions probably been my biggest.
Me too.
Manifestation, right, of the addiction side of coping mechanisms. So we all develop different coping strategies that are the best we can figure out at that time, until we learn that some better way for us, that works for us, and that someone that, you know, maybe we're able to get the help we need to help implement, because, like, a lot of times, even if you know theoretically, okay, you are supposed to do this to help you, you may not be able to do it on your own, you know. Yeah. You need help and support to make it happen for you, you know. So it's just, there's so many things going on in terms of, like, what allows you to actually experience healing.
Yeah. And the most courageous thing you can do for yourself is seek that help. Mm-hmm. To find a healer, a therapist, a psychologist, a coach, a spiritual mentor, some sort of guide to help you along that journey. And I was very, very blessed to have many spiritual mentors and availability of healers through the circles that I was putting effort into to grow and evolve in that way. And that's also what led me to this career path, to want to be that for other people. It isn't easy and it is very hard to do alone, but with help and assistance and broader perspective and understanding and just opening your mind to infinite possibilities as to the why, and not getting stuck or limited of this victimhood. And it's not because you're bad, and it's not because you did something wrong. It's something that is here to teach you to evolve. And no matter what, the greatest thing in my life, and it's something I'm truly proud of, is I grew up in a society where I grew up in Mount Druitt, and I can't tell you how many people have said to me, it's a wonder you never found drugs. It was readily available. I know where to get it. I have too many people that are on it that I just don't want any part of it. So I don't have the excuse of it wasn't available. It was a choice not to do it. I've never touched it, don't want to, because in some aspects I have fear of what the hell it would do to me. And I think I've been through enough. I don't need to add that sort of thing to it. Alcohol is something I don't overly like, so I've never gone down that route either. Cigarette smoke didn't agree with my lungs, so I never went down that route either. But these were conscious choices that I made. And the conscious choice not to act on, like as I said, people of abuse, people that are traumatized, act out and they want to recommit, and not to commit, not to act on that desire. And I'm telling you, I wrote dossiers on how to get rid of bodies and chop them up into millions of pieces. And I fantasized it and wrote about it, and I could have written a mystery novel on how to do it. But I chose not to do that. And that is the powerful strength of the soul and the inner essence of the purity of the human soul, that we choose not to do things despite what happens to us. Like, I watch so many things, an eye for an eye, and I can totally comprehend and accept someone doing it. I just don't want to be that person.
Yeah. I mean, from a spiritual perspective, you know, I think that that is also reflecting a little bit of the journey our soul has been through already, because at some point in our life, we did make the choice to respond to abuse with abuse and so forth. You know, and in some ways, like you were saying, Shaz, that's a horrible thought to think. But on the other hand, you know, you just have to come to a point of, like, you know, acceptance around that that is what it is. And it's part of how we learn and grow.
Yeah. And the choice to break the cycle.
Yeah. Yeah.
I love that. So what are your new practices and beliefs that have become central to your life now?
I think the main thing now, the main practice, and the belief is still, you know, there is no God but God. There's just one God. But I think for me that the understanding of what that really means has really expanded, because, you know, for me, it has become very central that I live my life in a way that I'm not just about thinking about me, not just caring about me, that I'm also caring about other people, doing everything that I can to help everyone and everything, because I'm recognizing more and more deeply that we're all interconnected, we're all interdependent. And so when I hurt someone else, whether it's intentionally or a side effect of a thoughtless action, it comes back to me as well in some way, shape, or form, you know, because we're ultimately all in this together. We're all interconnected and we're all interdependent. And so to become just more and more consistent in living in a way that's, you know, creating, not creating harm, and just sharing the love and the light and the peace. And you know, so that's the centering belief and motivation. And so then the practices, a lot of that, you know, has the, again, like for me, it's like these beautiful connections that I now realize about, you know, things that I learned as a young kid that Islam teaches us. And now I'm like, wow, at a much deeper level, going back to those lessons. So, you know, I mentioned earlier that the word Islam means peace, but that is actually not its full meaning, because the word Islam, it's an Arabic word. And Arabic is similar to Hebrew. Actually, it's a sister language with Hebrew. So there's a system of roots. Every word has like a root and has many different connotations. And so every word has many different meanings. And it really depends on the context within which you are using it that you say, oh, this particular meaning is what I mean. And so the way that Muslims are taught to understand what the word Islam means, it actually has two primary meanings. And the meaning of peace, but also meaning of submission. And the way those two meanings connect and why they're belonging to that same root is because Islam is the peace you achieve through submission. And so the key lesson or the key practice that I'm now working on living and embodying more and more is that submission piece, because submission is the way to peace, you know. And so submission to what? Now we're just, you know, it's like from the theological perspective, it was like, oh, submission to God. But it's also like from the more spiritual perspective, like practice-based perspective, it's more like a letting go process. You know, like you let go, you let go, you let go, you let go of everything that burdens you. It's like, so you let go of any emotions, any desires, any priorities, any needs, any wants, anything that prevents you from deepening that sense of peace, that deep prevents you from deepening that sense of connection with the oneness. You have to let it go. You just have to let it go. And so, and the very interesting thing is that you realize, I don't know how to let it go. So you even have to let go of your thinking that I'm going to be the one who is going to make it happen. And so you, So this is where the submission part of letting go comes in, is that you just have to be like, I can't even let go. I've tried, I can't. So I submit to you, God. Please, you make it happen. You let it go.
It's funny. It's because you're using the word submission. And when I sort of gave up, I used the word surrender. I turned around and I said, you know what? I'm done. I don't know what to do anymore. Tell me what to do. I'm not doing anything until you tell me. I'm done. I'm done making decisions. I've stuffed it up so bad until now. You tell me what to do. And submission is a great word for that. And I totally get that. Like, that hits me really core of heart, because I did that. I surrendered completely and just turned around and I said, I don't know what to do with life. It hasn't worked out in any way, shape or form for me. You now tell me what to do. So I just attune to them and I ask every day, how can I be of service? What do I need to learn from this? Tell me what to do. And I pray for that all the time. Tell me what to do. I don't know how to fix this. Tell me what to do. And the guidance always comes. And that is the beauty of it all, of when you can just turn around and say, I don't know what to do with this. Tell me what to do. And sometimes it'll be let go. Sometimes we cry. Sometimes it's scream. And sometimes it's love and joy and happiness. There's the polarities of the essences of it. And we need to experience the whole gamut of it all. We just can't intensify and only filter things through this minute amount of feeling. It has to be the whole gamut of the emotional sequence and the emotional vibrational frequency of everything. I love that. Would you have any advice to someone going through this awakening process right now? Anyone, anywhere, or especially any Muslims who are thinking that they can't find the peace within and how to search for it without breaking or leaving your religion?
You know, I think it's like we were saying, each one of us does the very best we can with what we know and what we have in that moment. And so it's really, I think, important that we just give ourselves some grace and some, just, if you can just trust yourself to the extent that if something is making you miserable and unhappy in terms of, you know, you're told do this, do that, but it's not working for you, just allow yourself to not do that thing. And do what does make you feel more peaceful and happy, regardless of how that may be perceived in terms of, oh, you're doing this wrong, or you shouldn't be doing this, or et cetera, et cetera. Like, trust that the thing that makes you feel more at peace, more happy, it's leading you in the right direction. That feeling of peace, that feeling of happiness is your signal, is your heart, mind, and soul telling you you are doing the right thing for you. So do more of that, makes that which makes you more happy and more peaceful. And so, you know, for me, like for a while, you know, my family and all, like, they were a bit worried about me. Am I going to, is Samia losing her faith? Is she, you know, what is she doing? But you see, I actually now have a faith, and I'm still, I still, the difference between when I called myself a Muslim when I was young, like in, let's say, teenager and earlier, and I call myself a Muslim now, the difference is that in my youth, I was on autopilot and I took on an identity that was given to me. Now I own it. Now I'm Muslim. I say, I claim my Islam because it's something I truly believe in and that I find true, like I find so much guidance and so much peace in following that guidance. And I had to go through like all these turny twisty pathways that, you know, like were not part of the traditional way things were taught to me, that were, you know, and so forth. But because I really believe I had sincere intention, and my intention was, you know, to find peace, to find happiness. And so, and in so far as Islam is the way to that, I found my way back to, but my understanding of Islam now is different from, and my practice of Islam now is different from when I was a teenager. So an example I might give is, you know, when I was in my teens and I started to observe the Islamic dress code, so I started wearing the headscarf and stuff, I used to be very focused on the rules. I was very, like, had to do everything by the book. So if even an extra inch of skin would show, I'd be like, no, 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 bad Samia, no, no. And I'd be judging other people too, by the way, policing and looking, noticing, ah, you're doing this wrong, you're doing that wrong. And at one level, that made me feel really good because I felt a sense of like, I know what the right thing to do it and I'm going to do it and so forth. But that kind of judgmental mindset is just very destructive to your happiness. I mean, every time you judge someone doing something wrong, it just automatically brings down your energy. You're in a more negative energy mindset, and you cannot be like judgy and happy at the same time. You just can't. And so, if you really truly want to be happy in your life, you have to either let go of the judgment or just stay unhappy, you know? And so I was like, no, I want to be happy. So I let go of the judgment. It was really hard. And in some ways, you know, it was a very contrary to how I was taught religion, which was like full of blaming, shaming, judging. Not only, you know, like the like pretty much like, you know, there's this way of doing religion that is like, don't do this, don't do that. This is wrong. This is bad. If you do this, you're going to go to hell. And every little big issue becomes a matter of, oh my God, you're going to get punished. You're going to go to hell, you know? And again, it's like that just wasn't working for me. It wasn't allowing me to feel the peace. So I had to give that up. And so, but what replaced it is, it's like, no, let go of judgment, to realize and recognize that, oh, actually, God doesn't want us to be miserable. God doesn't want us to be judgy. God wants us to be at peace. God wants us to be happy, to have compassion for others, to have empathy for others.
Sure does.
Right? So,
I love
it's
that.
follow your own inner peace and happiness.
I can tell you from personal experience, the greatest peace that I ever experienced was when I stopped judging other people. I don't anymore. I'm blessed to say that. I just accept, and I may not agree with certain behaviors. I may not agree with certain life choices. I just, well, they're doing the best they can with what they have, and that's their phase of life, and I can't change it for them unless they're willing and wanting to. And yeah, you just leave it be. I just don't accept anything like that, and releasing all the triggers associated with that is the most peace that you can ever find. It's amazing.
Yes. Yeah.
If you could go back to your younger self, what would you say to her?
So this is a lesson I learned from one of my beloved books. And that is, you know, just the lesson that, you know, sometimes we don't give enough credit to the people who love us, and that we don't trust them enough to share our vulnerabilities, our pain, our hurt. Like, I did not tell anyone about what had happened to me and my family. And my family loved me, but I couldn't bring myself to tell them. And I had a lot of fear around that either they won't believe me, or even if they believe me, they will not be able to love me. Because I think, you know, now I can see that that fear came from the fact that I was so blaming and judging myself. I was finding it difficult to love myself. And so I projected that onto them, that they wouldn't be able to love me either and believe me and trust me. But in that, I actually did them an injustice, right? I mean, I didn't, you know, like when the time came, when I finally, I think the very first person in my family that I told is my sister, and turns out she was like, oh, guess what? I guessed something like that had happened, and I guessed who it was related to as well. And so, you know, I didn't give enough credit to my loved ones. And so, you know, now the thing is that I say that, and I say that with knowing that when we do reach out for help and tell someone, it doesn't always go well. There is a risk. There is a risk that we take. And it's a terrible burden to put on, like, especially a child, and be like, you know what, if you tell the first adult or whoever and they don't believe you, if they don't help you, go and tell someone else. It's a terrible burden to put, especially on a child. But that may be just, again, one of those harsh realities that we have to accept. And because it is really important for us to ask for help, you know, it's like we do everything we can to help ourselves, and then we're stuck and we can't do any more. And so if you really want to break through beyond that, beyond whatever level you're stuck at, you need to get help, you need to get support. And so then you have to take that risk. And if you don't have good results the first time, keep going.
And what books or practices would you recommend to someone going through their spiritual awakening now?
You know, my favorite practice for myself now has become the open heart meditation. So you can just search for open heart meditation, or go to this, the organization, behind it is called Natural Way of Living.
Mm-hmm.
Natural Way of Living. So if you go naturalwayofliving.com, you are on the right place. Or you'll be in the right place. And over there, they have lots of free resources, including links to this free open heart meditation audio. But then they also have, you know, lots of different workshops and classes that they offer. And actually, honestly, like, I always welcome people to come and learn with me. But if you're not going to learn with me for any reason, or even if you are going to learn with me, I still recommend you also go to Natural Way of Living and learn with them, because I'm actually, they're my favorite. My favorite teachers and mentors are all in the Natural Way of Living community right now.
I love that. And it's a great site. I've been on it. There's a few things that are free on there that are very, very good. Yeah. And what's your vision for the future now that you've come through this journey? What do you envision for yourself, and where are you heading?
Yeah, you know, it's really just all back down to those basics of learning to surrender more and more, better and better, letting go more and more, better and better. Everything that burdens me, that prevents me from being my best, feeling my best, and ultimately, from a spiritual perspective, returning back home, you know, melting back into my ocean. Like, I love the analogy of I'm the drop, and, you know, my creator, my source is my ocean, and I just want to melt back into my ocean. And so anything that prevents me from that, I want to let it go. I want to surrender it. I want to, you know, it's like, it's just, you know, recognizing, oh, where am I holding something now that I need to let go of? And then just practice that practice of letting go, of surrender, of submission.
I love that. That's beautiful. Now, just give us a short rundown. Tell us all about your podcast and what do you do with it?
Yeah, so the podcast is called Make Change Fun and Easy. That's the logo for it you see in the background of my background. And the goal with that podcast really is, I do interviews on it primarily. Every once in a while, I'll put out an episode where it's just me sharing something that I really want to share. But I actually used to have another show that for like 2.5 years, it was just me talking. And then I was like, I think I've talked a lot and I don't want to keep just talking on my own anymore. So now I do interviews, and I interview people from as many different fields of change making as I can. So people who are out there working to create positive change in the world. And we cover change making in the context of personal change in your own life, but also creating social change. And a lot of the people that I interview are fellow change makers, and they have businesses, they have practices, and they're using their businesses and practices as their change making vehicles. And so we talk about, well, how in your field, in your area of expertise, how do you make change and how do you make it more fun and easy? You know, because like for me, it's like a spiritual perspective, right? Or value, I should say, that, you know, I really truly believe that spirit does not want us to suffer. Spirit wants us to be happy. Spirit wants us to experience joy and fun and love. And so, no matter what we are going through, no matter how difficult it seems, there is a way that we can create more fun, we can create more ease, experience more peace, with it and around it. And so I want to figure, learn more about all of that, from different people with different areas of expertise and so forth. So yeah, that's what it's about. Please check it out. MakeChangeFunAndEasy.com. You can go there.
Comments
Yeah.
on video. So I really appreciate your time today, Samia, and that beautiful sharing of your journey. I understand it because I've been through it, and I love seeing that you've not lost yourself along the way, but gained so much by broadening your horizons and taking in more aspect. And I love your just perfect description for us to understand, because I never had a great knowledge of Islam. I dated a Muslim guy many, many years ago, and I had some knowledge of it. But to understand that Islam means peace and submission, I can take that with my whole heart. I love that energy. I feel peace and submission is something that we all need all over the world. And my great wish for everyone is to let go and surrender of what you've been through and embrace the lesson behind it so that you can thrive and totally create the life that you want. Happiness is available to us. It is a choice that we make each and every day, and we can make it fun and easy. We can make it very, very simple. I'll also put a link down for your book so that people can look at that if they want to go and read that. And I believe that you have some amazing insights, and I appreciate all of your presence today. Thank you.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Until next time.
Thanks for listening to the Spiritual Awakening with Shaz podcast. Don't forget to like and subscribe down below so you don't miss an episode. You can also follow us on Facebook with the links below. Until next time, trust your intuition and let your spirit soar.